Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome once again to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. Thanks to Grassland Agro once again for helping us make this show happen. Plenty of rain around during the week and a cold spell hitting us now, but nothing outside of the ordinary for the time of year. This week I'm joined by Adam Woods, Darren Carty and Aidan Brennan once again. First up, it's the quick fire round. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Adam, coming to you here first. Hi, I love the show every Friday night. I have three sucker cows that have July calves suckling them. I want to factory the cows. Should I weigh the cow and calf pairs before I sell the cows? Where do I input the weights? Talk to me, Adam.
Yeah, so we've had a couple of queries in about this, Jack, and given the real good weanling trade, I suppose some farmers are looking at offloading maybe July, August born calves now because they're a really good trade. And yeah, very valid question around taking weights because obviously we have to take weights for the cow and the calf on the same day to be eligible for SCEP. So what we've said before and what has worked before is if you go in there and it's under record events tab on the Herd Plus account on the ICBF website and go down to record weight, you put in the date, and you make sure that you put the cow weight and the calf weight obviously in on the same day because both of them have to be sit weighed on the same day. So at the moment, that's all we have as regards a fail-safe way of guaranteeing your payment.
Okay, nice one. Good prices for cows and calves is driving that, as you say. We'll come back to that later on the show. Hi, all. It would appear that today that the days to slaughter index is having a negative impact on what bulls make the top of the replacement index, seeing as most of the new top 10 are used in the dairy sector. One would ask what relevance performance data from the dairy calf to beef system has in the sucker replacement index, and should such data be excluded when ICBF are calculating the replacement index? Okay, so the weighting, Adam, of the slaughter index in terms of the days to slaughter index, according to this listener, it's having a negative impact on what bulls make the top of the replacement index. Is he or she right?
Yeah, well, I suppose a days to slaughter is becoming more and more important because, you know, we've identified that as a key requirement of reducing our greenhouse gas emissions from animals in the future. So it has a weighting in there. Whether it is too much of a weighting, I'm not too sure. I'd be more worried about those bulls that are coming up to the top of the replacement index have been, as the reader or as the listener has said, they've been tried and tested in the dairy herd. So a lot of the bulls that have come up to the top of the replacement index, they've all been used on dairy cows up to this point. They haven't been used on sucklers, and we're using that data from the dairy herd to propel those bulls up to the top of the replacement index. And I know some of the people that was at the meeting last Thursday done a bit of work on looking at those top 10 bulls, and they're coming in at a cow live weight somewhere at the moment of somewhere around 550 kilos, but I don't know, is 550 too low, Jack, for a suckler cow in my mind? I know there's a happy medium there, but 550 and generally low weaning weights as well coming in there. So I think there's more work there, and I think it's going to be discussed as part of that stakeholder meeting as regards that low cow live weight. I know we'll come to it in the main show, but it's more for discussion, yeah.
Okay, the next question, next quickfire is somewhat related, Adam. How in God's name have we ended up where we are on beef indexes? It beggars belief to think we can be using an AI sire in 3 years that may be one or two star, but that still qualifies for SCEP. No one has any idea what's happening now. Is the department going to send out an explainer to all herds in SCEP now? Right, talk to me, Adam.
It's a really hard one to grasp this as regards the changes that was announced last week by the minister.
I thought you were asking for this, like.
Oh yeah, but now we've two indexes, I suppose, in terms of we're working on an old index and we're working on a new index, and yes, and in three yes. or 4 years' time we're still going to be like, I don't know how AI catalogs are going to manage this one in terms of where we have, what figures are we using as regards a bull being SCEP eligible or a bull not being SCEP eligible. Where a dam was 3, 4, or 5 star and the sire 4 or 5 star on the replacement index, the female offspring will be SCEP eligible. What I think is going to happen is, In a mart, when an animal comes into a mart, even though they might be 2-star at the moment, underneath that will be SCEP eligible.
Right. So, and no mention of stars, effectively.
The stars will be still up there, but it'll be SCEP eligible underneath. You'll almost want a little notebook with you, Jack.
But which stars will be up there, like? The 2-star or the 3, 4, 5-star?
No, I'd imagine it'll be the new index. So the 2 stars will be up there, but underneath it will be SCEP eligible, yeah. Yes, like there's all sorts of talks there about two boards going up in March, but to be honest, I don't think.
They're doing well to get one up. Like, it'll be we'll come back to it again, Adam. Thanks for that.
Darren, okay, a couple of questions in here, Darren. Let's flick through them. Hi. Is there any word from the Dept on the number of applications for tranche 2 of acres? So has the department said anything on the kind of number of applications for tranche 2 of acres? When will we know if we have been accepted into the scheme? A few days before we are supposed to have fencing of riparian zones completed. Thanks, Declan. So Darren, acres, numbers of applicants in tranche 2, what's the lie of the land?
Yeah, so 9,200 applications in Jack for 4,000 places.
Okay.
Look at that farmer, that listener, you can sense a bit of frustration, a bit of sarcasm at the end. When are you meant to know? They're already meant to have been told, like, so it is I'd expect that there needs to be something, say, told on that in the next few weeks, in particular because BIS applications are going to be opening, or there's going to be pressure on, and for BIS applications to open, you need to know whether you're in acres or not, because the
Okay.
department will have to have that on your BIS application form for
I
2024. So I'd
yes.
say the pressure is probably on to get that going, and I would imagine that in the coming weeks, the farmers will have to know something, or else the BIS opening date will have to be delayed.
Okay. And Darren, a supplementary question for bonus marks. Like, do we know how they're going to select between the 4 and the 9,000? How are they going to fit 9,000 into 4? What's going to decide there? Like,
Yeah, so it's a selection criteria. So tier one, tier two, and
yeah.
tier three. And very quickly, tier one is the likes of organic farmers that might have commonage,
Right.
farmers that are
Okay.
located in, I think, is it geese and swans area, farmers that have rare breeds. There's a couple
Okay.
of things we have covered online, Jack. If you go online and
Okay.
select acres specifications, it'll show up on that.
Okay, nice one. Hi there. Looking to install a solar system with the aid of TAMS grant. House and farm share same electricity meter and are located within 100 meters. Just wondering, would any of the lads be able to tell me, is it possible to install panels on the roof of the house, or must it be within the farmyard itself? Most sheds are 25 years old and a bit worried about the roof suitability. Keep up the good work. So, TAMS solar system, Darren, can you put them on the house?
Yeah, I'm not majorly up to speed on this, but what I do know is that no, on the house, did you have to go in the farmyard? Now, they could also go outside the farmyard on the ground, like in a field,
Yes.
if depending on,
They
say,
don't have to go
what sort of
rooftop.
site. Yes, it depends on what site you have, but the ancillary equipment would have to be in the farmyard. So some element has to be in the farmyard office. But to answer this listener's question, as far as I'm aware, no, they're not allowed on the roof of the house.
Probably better off not in the roof of the house, I'd say too. Anyway, we come to that again. Hi, I am one of the 28,000 farmers waiting for acres. Payments, I presume. However, there's another group of people waiting for payment and no word about them. I was in Glas Rare Breeds and record sheets were sent back last spring, but I have no payment received. So I got into contact with the planner who contacted the department. They said that no one was paid yet and they don't know when it will be paid. So these are the forgotten Glas Rare Breed farmers now. So there's been several years of this paid out, so the system must be in place, so they can't have the same reason as the acres. Have the team any ideas on what to do? Darren, have you heard of this? So this is a category of farmers that went into Glas in the rare breed piece and they've got no payment for 2023.
It's one I hadn't come across. Now, I did get the heads up, say, from that question was sent in, and we have the question asked to the Department of Agriculture. So hopefully we'll either have something in next week's paper or next week's tech talk. But it's something I hadn't come across, Jack. And I'm presuming it's only the element of the rare breed that isn't
Right.
paid, rather than the overall Glas payment.
How many
But still,
roughly were in the rare breeds section? I wonder.
It was small in Glas, Jack, because see,
Yeah.
it wasn't there wasn't any preferential entry, say, from it. So it was relatively okay. Small overall, but still important for the people having.
Thanks, Darren. Back to you in a minute. Aidan, two quick fires here for you. Love the show and all. Look forward to listening in the parlour on a Saturday morning. Few questions, please. Can Aidan remind me what is the story again, rebanding changes where milk yield output has dropped? Okay, that's the first part, Aidan. And then, is there any one place where I can download the most recent nitrates changes? So, Aidan, talk to me. And banding, yeah.
So, for banding in this year, it's based on milk yield last year. So, if you remember back to last year, there was no it was a new banding, was a new thing. So, there was an allowance made for farmers to select whatever band they wanted to be in for 2023. That's not happening now this year, is my understanding. You know, it couldn't really happen, Jack, because otherwise everyone, you know, if you're in the top band last year, you might select the middle or lower band this year, even though you're juiced to top band. So it's based on the previous year's milk production. I suppose if you're a new entrant or you're returning to milk, you can then select like all farmers were allowed to do last year. But it's based on the previous year's milk supply.
Okay.
The second question in relation to the any one place you can download all the changes. Yeah. Not really. Very difficult. Next week's Farmers Journal will have a full breakdown of it. So it'll be available online and then print.
Okay, nice one. We'll come back to that because I know you were at a water conference there. We can talk a bit more on that. How long, the second quick fire, Aidan, how long should you wait between injecting adrenochine and then dehorning? Thank you. Aidan, how long do you wait between, how long does it become effective? Like,
yeah, I think it's about 20 to 30 minutes. Adam and Darren would know there as well.
Just the big risk is there when you're in a hurry, you tend to go in and inject and you maybe go in and burn, you know, maybe too soon. The vet would always say leave it as a little bit longer than you think you've left it. You know, yeah. That's only from my experience anyway. That maybe Darren.
I mean, Aidan, is it normally lads go in and kind of inject the pen and then come back to the start? You know what I mean? If there's 10 calves in the pen or 15 calves, and by the time they've them injected, it's more or less gone 20 minutes anyway. Isn't that kind of the way it works?
Yeah. I suppose it would be, Jack. Yeah.
I mean, Adam would only do one or two there. If he had one or two to he'd have to go away for a cup of tea and come back. Thanks, Aidan. Back to you in a minute. That's what I have at the moment. Adam, I'll stay with you in terms of the main show. Talk to me about this mart trade, like €4 a kilo for weanlings. Have we ever heard of €4 a kilo for weanlings?
Probably for the blues, Jack, the ones they're trying to get rid of. But they've probably hit €4 a kilo. But I know the general run, probably, Jack, in terms of that 300 to 400 kilo weanling, probably not. And, you know, looking at a few marts over the weekend there, in terms of Ball, in terms of Elfin, in terms of Mohill, Monaghan Day on Wednesday, you know, it was just bananas. Great to see it. Absolutely brilliant. And, you know, seeing weanlings at 350 kilos open at 1300 and hammer on.
Yeah. And now, Adam, let's be real. Like, it wasn't the real fancy stuff. Like, these were kind of, I call it, general run kind of 300 350 kilo winners making the €4 a kilo, like.
Yeah absolutely. And look, it's a combination, I suppose, of a couple of things. I'd say weanlings maybe were a little bit tighter on the ground this spring maybe than other years in terms of a good back end for weanlings trade, so that has left those good, definitely better type weanlings sort of a little bit more scarcer in supply. And you've got a couple of very, very active exporters at the moment. Speaking to one exporter this week, 7 jobs they have on at the moment in continental Europe and across to the Middle East, so they're very, very active looking for weanlings, you know, in terms of for all those contracts. And obviously our front page story this week was Turkey in terms of what's happening out there. So the government has issued contracts for 600,000 weanlings or cattle out there. Turkey imported a lot of cattle, over 700,000 in 2023. A lot of them came from South America, Australia, and other countries like that. You'd never believe that Houthi rebels could be dictating the trade in Balmart in County Mayo, but that's what's happening, because that Red Sea and the disruption in the Red Sea in terms of shipping route going through there, there's big pressure coming through there. There was a big shipload of cattle returned back to Australia as a result of not being able to pass through that Red Sea area just after Christmas there in January. So that has led to huge issues getting cattle up to that and getting other imports and exports up that Red Sea route. So that's pointing them now to Europe, and it's pointing them to Ireland in particular, because the other countries around Europe are restricted with blue tongue. So that leaves them with less options as to source weanlands, and Ireland is one of those destinations where they're coming to.
I mean, it's a big one, as you say, the Houthi rebels. Like, I mean, the bad rebels usually have a good handle on it and keeping a handle on the trade, not letting it get out of kilter, like, you know. But
they'd have a job. They'd have a job with them boys, I'd say.
they would. But Adam, like, I mean, is how real is this 4 euros a kilo in terms of, like, are the majority of whales not sold at this stage, like we'll say, or what's going to come out to meet this demand now, we'll say, out of sheds, out of farmers' yards, out of fields?
Ah, yeah, look at absolutely, Jack. The big month for weanlings is September, October, November, and you know, less and less weanlings are probably being held across the winter because of, you know, feed costs and high meal costs and that, and a lot of people are shifting. And you take that high price in the autumn time when it was there, and a lot of people did. But for people that did keep them, it's definitely a big lift. And you know, there's massive confidence as well in terms of breeding heifers. Elfin had a special sale of breeding heifers last weddings, and you know, very, very good demand for suckler replacement heifers. And Kieran Lynch would say that those quality cattle are getting scarcer in supply, you know, less suckler cows in the West, less of those real top quality animals, and people, farmers who are breeding suckler cows see a value in that top quality animal, so they're willing to go that extra bit. But it was very, very high prices for breeding heifers last Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, so, but given the demand, as you say, that one exporter you were talking to that has 7 job lots on the Turkey job, and that kind of demand from that as well from exporters, like, I mean, what type of cattle are they going to source? Are they going to have to come back down a peg from the kind of suckler bred stock into kind of more dairy beef type?
Yeah, well, that Middle Eastern market, probably some of those jobs in Europe is quite good. You know, Greece is a good job, Italy is a good job. They're top end, top quality lots. But some of that Middle Eastern jobs are more maybe dairy beef stock and Angus maybe and an odd Frisian through there. And we just seen it in terms of market bids analysis this week. It was actually, would you believe, the lower quality weanlings that came up most in terms of market bids analysis this week. Some of those 200 to 300 kilo weanlings up 20 cents a kilo this week. Now look at 20 cents on a lighter weanling, I suppose, isn't as much in terms of money terms, but it's just interesting to see that lower quality weanling coming up as well. Sometimes it takes them a little bit longer to come up, and you see the good ones making good money, but you see the poor ones not going as well. This week it was the opposite. The poorer quality ones are coming up, and that's as a result, I think, of a couple of exporters starting to gear up for loads out to the Middle East again.
Okay, nice one. Real positivity, real demand, and it's looking positive into 2024 for the suckler lads so far to date. I mean, I suppose what will drive some questions on farms, Adam, is like in terms of if they have young bulls now, you know, in sheds, 300, 350 kilos, like, and maybe we're thinking of shoving them on now into under 16-month bull beef. Will this focus minds?
Yeah, it will, Jack, and we're crunching the figures down in Tullamore at the moment. Look at that. Last year in Tullamore, we would have lost 200 to 250 euros a head on the bulls by bringing them to the feed if we had to take the weanling price that we were getting in February. We're looking at that now, and we're doing the budget, and I suppose we're seeing where we're at. And we're talking to factories, Jack, very, very frustrating. No factory will give us a price for May or June for our bulls. They say they're not even giving prices to guys finishing big numbers, let alone us, or a smaller player with 30 or 40. But it'd be great to know, to give it an idea even where we're at in terms of putting maybe a ton of stuff into them at whatever, 350 a ton over the next 3 months. So we're gonna write about that on next week's paper as regards what decision we're gonna take there.
Okay, what weight, what numbers have you, what weight have you?
So he sort of has 10 live ones pulled out, so it's sort of roughly about 30 there, sort of around that sort of 420 kilos, and just doing up the feed that they're going to take now to take them to a 380 kilo carcass, do up an average grade. We've killed bulls for 6 or 7 years, we know what the grade is going to be. It's going to be an R plus, yeah, U minus, and we'll see where we're at as regards what's in it, and if there isn't enough in it, to be honest, this time above all years, I think this year, the way the trade is for weaners at the moment, we may be opting not to finish them, I think, for the first year ever.
And the lighter ones, Adam, is he squeezing them?
Yeah, squeezing them. I'm going to go to grass, and we'll maybe sell them as forward stores towards the end of the year.
Okay, nice one. We'll leave it there, Adam, on the weanlings. The other, speaking of Houthi rebels, the other showdown in town was the stakeholders on the ICBF rating. So this was the long talked about first stakeholder meeting of a big group of people to kind of keep them informed in terms of what's happening on this ICBF star rating changes and the whole skip debacle, etc., and all that kind of thing. Took place last week, Adam, late last week in Portlaoise, was it?
Yeah, it was actually in Tullamore. I think there was some mixed messages as to where it was going to be, but it ended up being in it ended up being in Tullamore. And look at it, I suppose you were never expecting 60 people in the room. You were never expecting huge movement around issues on the first day. I suppose everybody had to set out their stall as to where they were coming from, but we didn't get any movement at all as regards. And there's some confusion as well as to what actions were actually wrote down or what actions are going to come back. Next meeting is 22nd of February, which is soon enough. It's only a fortnight away. And I personally don't think it's good enough maybe to come back and say to, at the next meeting, well, we'll give an undertaking to look at this, so we'll take a look at the figures. We need to see maybe some action here on something. And look, there's pressure there, Jack. I think Francie Gorman, new IFA president, would have given undertaking in his presidential opening speech at the AGM, saying that this was one of the key issues he was going to sort out in the first couple of weeks. Sean McNamara was the same at the ICSA, AGM last week, saying that he was going to sort out this issue. So I suppose we can't keep going that we're going to sort it out. Something has to happen. The two big ones I think that came out of the meeting was cow weight. That's a big, big sticking point. And then weanland value as well, as regards what weanland values has been. There's a big thinking out there that ICBF or Chagas aren't using. We talk about 4 euros a kilo there. There's nowhere 4 euros a kilo. I don't think is in that model. And people will argue, well, maybe for the top end suckler cows, that should be in there in some form in terms of that top quality weanland. Pedigree breeders are also quite exercised about young bulls. I suppose we've had the bit of leeway there on Skep around the Stars not moving and still being Skep eligible. What about pedigree bulls that were born in 2023 that are going out to farms this year? What if their numbers has fallen or figures has fallen? Are they still Skep eligible? There's no clarity on that. So there's a couple of issues there around that. And we've got a really good sort of rundown from breed societies and from farm organisations this week on the beef page as regards what their thinking is and what they want to see at the next meeting. But this one's going to keep going, I'd say, whether we'll see those changes. Remember too, these changes won't happen on the 22nd of February. It won't take place then until the next run, if any changes are agreed or implemented. It's on the next evaluation run they will come in.
And was there chat around the Skip pieces in terms of change? Like, I mean, we had talked about, we had that story previously in terms of the Skip. Like, that's all part of this mix as well, but they left that aside. The focus in Tullamore was kind of on the kind of the genetic changes as such, was it?
Yeah, so the minister came out a day or two before the meeting in Tullamore and sort of took the heat out of that one on the Skip changes. Like, we've probably two issues with the direction of breeding of the suckler herd and where we're going, and you have the Skip. And I suppose Skip is pretty much maybe sorted out. People will argue it's very, very confusing, and I think further clarity is needed there as well. But the direction of where we're going probably is a whole other question.
Okay. Adam, 100%, I think I'll leave it at that for this week, if that's okay. We've touched off a good few of the bits and pieces, and we'll chat again next week anyway. Thanks, Adam. Darren, I'll say the big question for you is around this whole acres piece and where it's at. Like, I mean, there's a lot of, we got a touch off it there in one of the quickfires. He was at Lost Rare Breeds, man. But this is on acres, and the 28,000 is a big group of people that are looking for payment. And is there any sign of it just yet as we record here now?
Yeah, Jack, unfortunately not. There's a lot of silence around this. From speaking to a good lot of, say, planners this week, they're not hearing any feedback. The same messages coming back from farmers or planners contacting the department is that we don't know. This payment is set for February for cooperation. Payment is set, is ongoing for acres general. But now saying the payment is ongoing, that was the story that was back in November, was this cooperation payments wouldn't take place until February, and that acres general payments would continue as cases were cleared. I don't know, Jack, has there been any payments made under acres general? What we had last week is there was nothing made. If there has been anything, it's been in the last week, and I have yet to get any farmers or advisors telling me that they got paid this week. So I'll be interested to see next week. I think that a lot of people in Acres Cooperation had a sort of target of the middle of February for payment, and that's very quickly coming around. You're into next week on that, and the silence, I think, is, as you wrote this week, the silence is deafening on it. So I'd be less enthusiastic now around it, Jack, to be honest, because...
There hasn't been anything on it. But Darren, has Have you got any kind of feedback or kind of picking up anything on the ground in terms of why this is? Like, is it, we've heard about the IT issues. Is it still coming back to the IT issues, do you reckon, or is there something more? Is there something deeper?
No, as far as we're hearing, Jack, they're still coming back to the IT issues, talking through, say, the planning organisations, that through the feedback that they have from the department, and through some of the cooperation groups, say they're in regular contact with the department. It all seems to be boiling down that there is issues around IT system and identifying or streamlining payments. So that seems to be the big barrier. It's not like, I've had some calls from farmers and they're saying, is the money not there? I don't think there's any question mark around that. I think it's the actual, just a physical system to approve payments and streamline payments into farmers' bank accounts.
Okay. It's amazing. You think, like, in today's age of computerization and IT, that, you know, you'd be able to fix something like this, you know, but when these databases get big and complicated, Darren, like, it obviously is causing problems. Like, there's real infrastructure challenges there within the department, it sounds like. Is that fair to say, like?
Oh, definitely fair to say, like, and it's not just acres. Like, the other department sections would have told us, they would have said at times that the decision to let in the 46,000 acres applicants, that it did have knock-on consequences. And Minister McConlogue, even we talked about last week, he accepted that when he talked at the recent Chagas Sheep Conference. He said, I know, he said there was issues, I know there was delays, but I would rather be paying farmers in February as opposed to not giving them any payment for 2023. You know, some farmers talking to them after that event, they said, that's all well and good, he needs to pay farmers in February now, but like, we do know that would have spilled over as well into the whole TAMS area, Jack. That's part and parcel of the delays in getting TAMS approval out is IT infrastructure, and I think that IT, say, infrastructure in TAMS is related to the development issues, I think, in acres. So, and look, we do have to accept that it's the first year of a new system, but farmers will argue, and rightly so, is that it's their money that's being held up, and it's vital payments at a stage of the year and at a time when we continue to grapple with record input costs.
Yeah, that's the squeeze that's coming on, absolutely. Okay, right, that's it. I'll leave it there in terms of the acres job. In terms of the organics, Darren, I see a piece there on page 3. So it's another 1,050 farmers gone into organics. So that, am I right? Does that bring the total organic farmer count now up over 5,000?
Yeah, if you're looking at acres and you're looking at organics, it's funny, like, because they couldn't be a polar opposite at the moment, that all the buzzwords around organic is positive with payments, say around average 11,000 or 12,000 per farm. We've taken in another 1,050 farms. They've hit the 5% target for utilizable agricultural land farmed organically for 2025. They've already hit it. The minister, Pippa Hackett, put out a very, I suppose, maybe positive briefing when she was talking about 1,050 in. She was encouraging farmers to continue to look at acres, to visit farm walks, to get in contact with advisors. So that would, to me, convey a message that she is at least optimistic about it opening again. There was question marks around whether this would, say, I suppose, satisfy the department's organic farming scheme commitments for the CAP strategic plan. There'll be roughly, by my reckoning, somewhere in the region of 50 million to 55 million ped this year if you're to go on 5,000 farmers at an average of 11,000 or 12,000 a farm. So if you are going to go and open it again, I think that you might be in a scenario where you might be looking for more funding. But organics is one of the areas, Jack, that any funding asked so far has been delivered. We've seen funding coming out of numerous different avenues, whether it be the Brexit Adjustment Reserve, Borbia got extra funding. Excuse me. There was extra funding through the CAP strategic plan. So you'd have to say that, I suppose, momentum is on it. But it's now at a level, I think, where if you're 5,000 farmers in it, you're significant. That we would have often talked about organics and said there was maybe 1,000 or 1,200 farmers in it. And it was the I won't say the poor relation, but it was the it was the sort of the minority you'd probably put in that. But with 5,000 farmers, it's gone away from that now.
Yeah, you're getting into a kind of a significant enough cohort, as you say. Like, yeah, good group of farmers. One of the pieces that a lot of those organic farmers don't want to do, Darren, is buy feed. They need to be growing their own because the cost of the organic feed is, you know, feeding organic animals during the winter on concentrated is very expensive. Normal conventional feed is expensive enough at nearly 400 euros a ton versus the organic stuff is coming in, you know, almost double that in some instances. But you have a piece there in the focus on kind of what represents value for money in terms of feed ingredients. Like, I mean, your lads not just feeding a shake of oats and that's good enough, like.
I don't know if they could get the shake of oats. Jack, they'd probably be better off than some of the other feeds that they are getting, and I think that's something that has materialized out of this. And look, out of any scheme there's always going to be, I suppose, maybe people that will see an opportunity, and look, this isn't carte blanche. It isn't I suppose maybe circling all the merchants with the same, but there is definitely some suboptimum quality organic feed in the market now. And I think the piece we have this week is the piece we did there with Chagas, just around identifying what's good feeds, what's value for money, because some of the feed ingredients, Jack, and some of the say feeds that are there at the moment, like when you start seeing ingredients like wheat feed or pollard or cottonseed high up along the inclusion list, you start to worry. Like, and it's in total contrast to that, Chagas and the Department of Agriculture have done a good bit of work around trying to match, say, organic farmers, organic tillage growers with, say, livestock farmers to, say, set up direct deals. And there is some bigger, say, tillage producers, or there's some merchants now that have sort of branched off into, say, developing rations that have a lot of cereal, say, high feed value cereals in it. And there is some good value relative to, I suppose, the higher cost feeds there at the moment. And there's a lot of work being done there now, and even sourcing non-GM soya to put into some of them feeds. So I think without spending any much, say, more time on it, it's for farmers to know what feed ingredients are good value. And this applies right across the board. While we're talking about organics now, a conventional farmer can pick up that article and still get something out of it, because it's not just organic feeds where there's maybe lower quality feeds in it. It's right across the board. And like, we've often talked about this, Jack, is that yes, there's difficulties in getting a net energy value or a metabolizable energy value on the side of a feed label, but definitely what we can continue to push for is that there is the percentage of ingredients that then farmers can work it out for themselves. All we have at the moment is ingredients in descending order, but there is a bit of data there in this week's Lambing Focus that farmers can at least look at that and see our alarm bells can ring if there's lower quality feed showing up.
Yeah, and I mean, isn't it fair to say, Darren, like if you look at the top three ingredients, like, you know what I mean, they should be making up the majority. So if you have a weak link in the top three, you know, there's a good chance you kind of have a weak enough kind of a quality feed. Isn't that fair to say?
It is, Jack. I think that's a good benchmark. And definitely, maybe you could go to the top five in a feed that has a lot of maybe different ingredients, but definitely like your top three ingredients, they need to be good cereals. Like, and when you say good cereals, barley, wheat, maize, oats to a certain extent. Now, you're not going to see much maize, so you're adding in organic feeds, but in a normal conventional feed. And then you're into the likes of your pulps, like, it's the lower quality feeds. Like, one of the things actually on a different article in the Lambing Focus is from Tim Keady. He was looking at the relative feed value. And if you look at feeds like distillers or rapeseed, that there is a bit of value to be gotten those, but at low inclusion rates. So if you see them low down along the, say, the list of ingredients, yes, they might be okay. But it's if they're high up in order and they represent good value for money at the moment. So there is a risk of some of them being maybe shoved in at a higher inclusion rate than what is desired. So it's all about balancing the right feed. And look, we're heading into late pregnancy feeding for a high percentage of flocks now. This is the time to get that right, because yours are in maybe poorer condition than previous years. So you definitely want to start off on the right foot now.
Get the beasts going at this stage.
Darren, it's fair to say, like some of the flocks have started lambing. You know what I mean? Those kind of, I call it, relatively early main crops are beginning to pop out now. Like, you know, it's you know, and we're talking about the weather. It's tricky enough for some of these, but there is probably grass around there on a lot of farms. Like,
yeah, there is in some of the earlier lambing flocks, Jack, and some of those. It's tricky getting lambs out, but some of those are maybe set up for this time of year lambing. There's a good few of those that might have an element of a pedigree, say enterprise. But the, I suppose you're starting to come into more sort of conventional flocks now lambing down. Like, I'd say the amount of conventional flocks lambing down in January is at its lowest, as low as it's ever been. And some of them have pushed back into February. There is a bit of grass, as you say, in some of them. Farms utilization will be challenging enough in along the west coast, better as you go east and midlands, ground conditions that was bad, but if you can utilize some of that grass in the diet now, Gini, it makes some difference in reducing feed costs. It's the difference between night and day. Like,
last one, Darren, before I leave you go, lamb prices in general, are they up or down, or where are we?
Yeah, I put a headline on the Sheep Trends yesterday around tug of war and lamb prices. And what I meant on sort of by that is that, so the factories are quoting low. They've kept that quote around 665 to 680 as a base quote. That puts quality assured lamb 685 to 690. There is some sheep moving at 690 to 7 euros. Groups are balking a bit at that. Because obviously the premium that they're getting or should be getting is being eroded by the lower quotes. There's some marts, some farmers that are going to marts that are struggling to negotiate with factories. And like, you have a variation there from 690 right up to 720 being paid. And plants or factories have been slow enough to sort of to increase the prices because they're able to pick off some of them lower priced ones and adopt it into the I suppose, the negotiation curve. They're giving a bit, so they are, and paying extra to farmers that have big numbers or to agents, and that's readily seen, so it is in the market trade. A lot of focus coming on prices in Britain, prices in Northern Ireland, because they have moved on in recent weeks. We've been left behind a bit, and I think that if that continues to happen next week, you're going to see more of a focus and more of a question mark around why base quotes haven't moved here and the differential between what's quoted and what's actually being paid. But at the end of the day, one of the things that we haven't any oversight is we have no transparency in the sheep side of things. We can pick up the Farmers Journal from yesterday and we can see the average price paid on beef, the beef side of things. At this time of the year, the one thing that groups would take your right hand off for is that if there was some sort of price transparency, that they could operate a system off the average of what's being paid and a top up on top of that. But that's a big challenge we have, Jack, and in particular a big challenge in an environment where we're still not sure what's happening around Kildare Chilling, Dawn's acquisition of Kildare Chilling. They're the only ones that have kept the quote up in recent weeks.
Okay, nice one, Darren. 100% we'll leave it at that for the moment. I'll chat to you again next week. Aidan, some of the quickfire questions related to around this whole space of water quality and nitrates and the challenges that are there. You were at one of those big water quality conferences during the week. Like, I'm sure you heard lots about nitrates and all the challenges and changes that have been made over the last number of years.
Yeah, plenty of talk, Jack, you know, and I suppose I kind of went away from the meeting or the conference a little bit disillusioned, like, in terms of there was a lot of okay, look, a multi-organisations involved. There was Law Pro, there was ASIP Advisors, there was Chagas, there was Department of Agriculture, Department of Housing and Local Government, who are the ones in control of the Nitrates Directive and its implementation in Ireland, and Chagas officials as well. And got the sense I got going away, Jack, is that we'd be better off if farmers stopped farming altogether and left the land to nature. Do you know? And I'm being flippant now, but like, there was a lot of talk from some of the, you know, around the impacts that farming has. And I think there's a big disconnect there, Jack, between the regulators who these people warned to me. Now, there are advisors and Trinity Law Pro people there now as well in the audience. And and what's actually happening to farming. And I mean, there's people talking around the impact of water quality on tourism, on fishing and all the rest. And no mention of the impact of water quality on the derogation. Like, it was, you know, and the impact that's going to have on farming in rural Ireland, like, it's massive.
Yeah.
I suppose, look, the big takeaway from it, I suppose, is that the Department of Agriculture officials and the Chagas officials clarified that, you know, the story in last week's Farmers Journal around that the commission themselves have clarified on what the commissioner said when he came over last November in terms of the derogation. And this was repeated ad nauseum from the Department of Agriculture and others in the room that met him, that stable water quality will retain Ireland's derogation. That's now shown up to be not true. If you're in an area that has got a moderate or poor water quality, you have to show an improvement in that water quality in order to hope the derogation will be retained. Because really, anything that's poor or moderate is in contravention of the Water Framework Directive, which states that all water qualities should be good or very good by 2027. So really, Ted Massey said to me is that, you know, our hope here is that if we can show, okay, we're not going to get that in, I'm paraphrasing now, you're not going to get that in all catchments, but if you can at least show an improvement in those catchments that don't meet that criteria, we've some, you know, we can arm ourselves with that information going to the commission when we're seeking the next review. And he's expecting that could be enough to retain the derogation. So right. It's up for listeners and viewers to decide for themselves whether that's a chance that they're willing to take or not.
Yeah. I mean, it's, as you say, you know, so all the stories, Aidan, that we had, you know, in terms of, first of all, the story around that, listen, you know, the 220 mightn't come, you know, we might stay at 250 for this year, for 2024, that, you know, that was a story going around and there was a bit of flexibility there in that front. Then the 220 got nailed on. And then, as you said, the commissioner came over and said, listen, if you even just hold and maintain what water quality you have, you'll get the next phase of the derogation. So all that has been ruled out. So in terms of leeway, like Ireland Inc. has or got very little leeway in terms of the whole piece around the derogation.
Yeah, as things stand, Jack, right? But we have a minister of agriculture, a minister for Department of Housing and Local Government. We have a Taoiseach at Taoiseach. We have a whole load of people in government that are supposed to fight in farmers' behalf, or particularly the behalf of Ireland Inc. In order to get the best deal for Ireland. And it's up to them now. They have 2 years before this rule is going to come into play to make sure that the commission understands the implications of not having a derogation or a step down derogation or any change to derogation will have in Ireland. Like the parts of the country that are going to be affected by this mostly are the ones in the southeast, because that's where nitrates is a bigger problem. And of course, the thing is, Jack, if you got rid of all those farms, and this was more or less mentioned at the Water Quality Conference, if you got rid of all, if you stopped farming, right, completely, and this, Eddie Burgess said this, that the actual, you know, you would still have elevated levels of nitrogen in the estuaries from the rivers in those areas because of just the nature of the landscape. So, and obviously, look, farming is a contributing factor. I'm not saying it's not.
No.
The thing is to ensure that whatever load we're releasing or the losses that we're going to have from farming, which are there, are you know, the environment is able to absorb. And that's really the key thing you want to achieve here. I suppose his point was, again, if you have an appropriate stocking rate, appropriate whole farm stocking rate, you're not going to have, it's not going to have any impact on much, and any negative impact on much. So, yeah, like, I mean, there's, look, this isn't going to go away. I mean, people, I suppose, who feel that they're not affected by the derogation are probably sick of me talking about it. But like, it's such an important area, even for dairy farmers, Jack, who aren't in a derogation currently, right? They're less than 170. They don't realize that if Dairy Gold or Tierlawn, if half their supply is lost, which could potentially happen, what impact that's going to have on those businesses that they rely on for milk price. I mean, sure, it has massive knock-on benefits for all of Ireland.
Yeah, not to mind the knock-on into other sectors as a result of land availability and all the bits and pieces around that, Aidan. Like, isn't that fair to say as well? Like,
absolutely. Meat processing, we know 60% of the throughput through Irish meat processors is from the dairy herd. If there's a reduction in the dairy herd as well as this, you know, that's a direct impact in terms of beef. So it's not just one sector, like, it's across the board. And as you say, in the tillage side, in terms of land development.
Is it still, like, I mean, is the uncertainty piece still the big kind of issue here, Aidan, for farmers, we'll say, that are looking to make plans for the next 5 to 10 years? You know, I mean, the uncertainty in terms of numbers of what they can or cannot kind of milk and the land that they'll need to be able to do that. Like, is that still the big unknown and the big challenge for dairy farmers?
It is. It's definitely one of them. Like, I mean, and I don't know, is that going to be addressed or not? You know, I don't know, will the commission change from their four-year cycle that they have on it? Now, there is the public consultation is open on the whole nitrates directive. So maybe something will come out of that. You know, unlikely to see it, to be honest. So you're then asking farmers to make a large investment, you know, in slurry storage that they may not need in by 2026. And look, we don't know that for sure. And nobody will know that until the decision is made. But it's a difficult ask, you know. But the thing is, if we don't ask for it and the farmers don't build it, then it's more likely that we're going to lose derogation because water quality improve.
Right.
But then again, what impact does that have? We don't know either, you know. And there's a whole raft of things that, like, you know, that we're doing. There's 39 measures put up, and a questioner, a farmer asked at the start of the show, you know, what are the recent measures and where can we see them? There's 39 measures introduced since 2018, and the vast majority of them will make little or no difference to water quality.
Yeah.
But these are measures for derogation farmers to adhere to. And look, that's fine. I mean, farmers have done it. They're on board with it. But most of the water quality issues could be coming from a non-derogation farm. You know? So there's only 7,000 farmers in derogation in the country.
Yeah.
There's 140,000 herd owners or whatever. So it's there's a huge, or holdings anyway, there's a huge, you know, there's a huge dearth of lack of joined up thinking, I suppose, between them all.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're targeting a subsection of the sector and of the industry, like we'll say. And yes, some of them are important players and some of them are doing stuff wrong, but the majority are doing things right and have the investment in place. But okay, no, that's fair enough. Aidan, we'll park the nitrates. And just in terms of calving in general, what's the kind of roundup? Is it going well? Are you hearing any kind of scare or horror stories, or what's the kind of lie of the land at the moment?
No, it's going pretty well, Jack. I haven't heard any issues. I suppose one of the areas of concern is possibly that cows are in too good condition score. A lot of farmers are saying the cows in great order. Silage quality was good this year, albeit there's not a massive amount of silage around. Okay, there's sufficient, I'd say, in most cases, but what was made was made in good conditions and quality is good. I suppose cows have had a longer dry period than normal as well, Jack, because they were dried off earlier because of the wet weather in the back end. And so a combination of good silage and longer dry period, cows are fatter. There's a risk there that they want to get milk fever when they calve down. And I suppose if you have a couple of cases of milk fever already, there's more likely a couple of multiplied more cows that have subclinical milk fever that just aren't showing it. So really you need to go in with some sort of preventative measure there. And I suppose the easiest one in my book anyway is probably additional magnesium prior to calving. And that can be, you know, given in a number of ways through the water, through magnesium flakes on top of silage or sprinkling CalMag. And that's it gets the cow's system going in terms of producing more calcium and magnesium herself post calving. If she has that magnesium, it has a number of functions there in terms of prevention. I suppose another option is to give a calcium bolus or a calcium bottle after calving, but it's extra work, extra cost. Really get avoiding it day one would be a better bet. Obviously by having cows in appropriate condition score, but and look, you don't want them too fat either because it's a waste of feed, really, it's a waste of it's a waste of lots of things because cows that lose body conditions, because they lose more than half a body condition score after calving, have a greater chance of not going in calf or having, you know, affecting their fertility at least. Yeah. So there's plenty of evidence to say that losing too much weight in one go is bad for cows and people, believe it or not.
Yeah. It's related to our first topic, Aidan, in terms of the nitrates, but like moving cows now, selling calf cows or selling in calf heifers, is there any much trade in it, or are we kind of in between periods? We haven't got enough of cows calved and we're kind of let's wait until later on the season, or what's the kind of lie of the land there? Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of in between. I suppose March and April is often a busy time for the clearance sales when cows are calved and all the rest, but there have been a few clearance sales now, and money prices have been quite good. I know there was a few around the country, Cork and then Tipperary recently. And you're getting, you know, those decent money, I would say, for calved or cows in the point of calving and in calf heifers also. But it's more likely going to happen now come March or April when you've those freshly calved cows that the farmers are looking to get out of then. I suppose, look, there's still uncertainty back to policies, Jack. There's still uncertainty over the whether or not there's going to be a cull cow scheme introduced or cow cull scheme introduced. Yeah. And a lot of farmers who are considering getting out are holding out for information on that at least because. You know, there's talk there to get potentially up to 3,000 euros a cow if they cull their cows, which, you know, they would be, naturally enough, Jack, they wouldn't want to miss out on that if it was there. but the minister is sitting on that for at least 2 years and hasn't made a decision on it yet. So the sooner a decision is made on that one way or the other, you know, there probably will be more freeing up of cows and people deciding what their future is.
Yeah. Last one, Aidan. Are calf cows getting out to grass for a couple of hours during the day, even in some places?
Yeah, sure. In and out, Jack, because, you know, last Tuesday was very wet. Last Wednesday then was a lovely day. And look, there's been snow in places then since then and more colder weather. But they have been out and in, I would say. And I suppose, look, if it's cold and dry, it's ideal for cows. Like, cows aren't afraid of the cold. It's one thing that you always have to remind farmers of, because sometimes I hear them say, oh, it's too cold, I wouldn't let them out. Like, but sure, it's perfect for them outside. It's a cleaner environment. They're getting grass. They're not going to do as much damage because it's dry. But definitely, look, it's one of our biggest tools in our arsenal is grass. We probably haven't, you know, some farmers have taken their eye off the ball in recent years around the importance of early spring grazing. But if you go back to the quota era, Jack, it was so important in terms of reducing costs. And we're now back in that zone again where the margin from dairy farming is really constrained because of high costs and mediocre milk price in relation to those costs. So really, we need to get a renewed emphasis on getting cows to grass, making sure your allocations are correct. And the good thing is, Jack, because cows were housed earlier at the back end, we have more grass available on farms, and growth over the winter has been quite good. So it's one tool we have to improve profitability in 2024 is to get cows to grass in early spring.
Okay, nice one, Aidan. We'll leave it at that for this week. On that note, thank you, and chat to you next week. Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks for watching and helping us to keep the show going. Thanks to Grass and Agro for helping us to keep the show on the road as well. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to our contributors, Adam, Darren and Aidan. Thanks again for the questions. Any more questions, WhatsApp 0868 366 4465. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcast. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and stay farming.